This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Alan Yeager Show. Not really, but he is our guest today. He is a great person. You're going to love listening to him. He's been on thousands of podcasts because he knows so much, not just in long toss, but other topics. And guess what? I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, and this is Baseball Outside the Box. Alan Yeager fits perfect into this show simply because we are the show that loves to challenge the status quo. And we love having some of the best people in the industry talk about development, especially long-term development. And Alan is one of the best at it. Today, we're going to focus on long toss. But, you know, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Alan. Before I do, I want to give a shout out to our friends, because guess what? We just got back. Sorry, we missed about a week. We got back from 2 weeks overseas. We were in Tunisia and Lithuania. Shout out to our Tunisian baseball coaches. You guys were fantastic. We did a one-week course there. We did a intro where we worked with the coaches on the field, in the classroom. We gave them a test on the field, also a test in the classroom. But prior to that, we did some testing to see where their knowledge was. Well, let me tell you, knowledge was pretty good. And I probably learned more from them than they learned from me, because there were quite a few coaches there. And then we hopped over to Lithuania, did the same thing. And a shout out to our Lithuanian coaches. You guys were awesome. And what I love about the Lithuanian, they are tough men also. You know, they do some great work. One of the first players in the big leagues from Lithuania. We will tell you a little bit about him in our next show. So Lithuania's got a big leaguer playing with the Pirates. So you're going to see more players coming out of there. And also Tunisia will surprise you, because we had some great coaches. Special shout out to all the women in the course. I'm a big fan of coaches that are women in baseball. I really believe we need more of them. They do a great job. They have a better temperament than some of us guys that have been in the game too long. So I think that's going to, I think the game's starting to change, not only in a lot of areas technology-wise, but it's also changing when it comes to coaches. Alan talked about it on a couple podcasts that he was on. Well, let me tell you, Alan Yeager, yeagersports.com. Hey, you got to check it out. I'm jealous. He's got 51,000 followers just on Twitter. That's just Twitter. He's on all the social media areas. Follow him. He's got great videos, great stuff. You know, he's got a great background. We're going to put it on our show notes. And, you know, you were talking about a guy that played college baseball, coached college baseball. He's got, I don't know, I was reading like 200 guys in professional baseball, probably more, a lot more now. He is well known all over the world and in the U.S. You know, he's known as the long toss guy, but let me tell you, he's just not a long toss guy. He's an arm specialist. He's a yoga specialist. He's a mental training specialist. He's got a lot of areas. This guy's one of the brightest guys in the world. He's also very modest, simple, in a lot of ways. You know, he's not controversial, but he will tell you that what he believes in. So I really love to talk to him. So let's just get started right away, because you're going to learn more about him as we go along, if this is your first time listening. Thanks to all our listeners for being on today. And let me welcome our good friend from California, Alan Yeager. Alan, what's up, buddy?
Peter, what's up, my man? Number one, thank you so much for the kind intro. And I know how humble and modest you are. You do so much for this game. You know, honestly, I'm not just saying this to say it, but one of the things I love to do at the ABCA show is crash the international coaches get together, and with you and Tom O'Connell, and it's such a great environment, and it's inspiring. I mean, every time I go there and I hear about, you know, the coaches from all over the world that are there. So just hearing you talk right now about Lithuania and Tunisia it's inspiring. I love the fact, and I love, like you said, it's great that more women are getting involved with coaching. And look, man, it's an honor to be on your show. Again, you do so much for the game, and it's a treat. So I'm really looking forward to chatting about anything you want to chat about.
All right, thanks, buddy. Really appreciate that. And we got to get you on the ISG baseball tour again. I know you were on it a little while, took a little break, but hope we can get you back on, traveling around the world a little bit and spreading the good stuff. Thanks for that. And also want to make sure that everybody goes to JaegerSports.com. Now, as we go along, he's on all the social media stuff. He will talk about some of the things that he has online. And Alan, we're going to get started. This particular talk is going to be about long toss, and I'm sure we'll get into some other things along the way. And one thing I wanted to just preface before we talk about this to our folks out there, you know, I've been in the game, 37 years. I was counting, you know, and I didn't realize how fast time flies. And I remember when I first started at Mickey Owen Baseball School, 15 years old as a student, became a counselor at 17. Long toss was around back then, you know, and back then that was the day, that was the years where, you know, we were teaching basically fundamentals, mechanics, movements. That's it. You know, we didn't have technology. We don't have the things we have today. You know, then later on, I ended up in Japan doing a lot of work there, and yet long toss again. So long toss has been around, but you've really done your homework and done a lot of work on long toss. So I want to get into the history a little bit of long toss. I know you use that as a player, but give us a background of the history of it. Well, you know, where did it come from? And if we even know, and how did it kind of evolve into where you're at now?
Wow, what a great question. I don't know if I've ever really quite had that question posed me that way, but you know, my first knee-jerk reaction, believe it or not, was Mother Nature is where long toss comes from. And the reason I want to start there is because a lot of times when I'm talking to people about long toss, I tell them one of the best benefits about long toss is it's natural, it's innate, it's intuitive. So when you throw a baseball, the idea of someone putting you on a restricted throwing program or telling you to throw the ball on a line and not throw the ball at arc, you know, these are the kinds of things that are not athletic, they're not intuitive, they're not natural. So long toss to me is just something it's just natural because, look, as human beings, whether we're trying to run faster, jump higher, throw harder, throw further, hit harder, you know, whatever it is, that's part of how we're built, right? We're trying to test our limits, right? We're trying to break the 4-minute mile. So, In a nutshell, if you put a baseball in your hand, you want to throw it, yes. And obviously, you have to do it over time and get your arm in shape. But the idea is that it starts to feel good as you open up your arm and stretch it out and expand and release and free up all those great kind of words that we connote with, you know, being athletic. So, you know, to me, long toss is just something that you do naturally. So I think what we've done is we've taken the concept of long toss. I mean, we've put a little bit of a face on it, talking about the stretching out phase and the pull down phase, listening to your arm as opposed to, you know, someone coming along and saying, you know, make this many throws at this many feet. And I get it. There's a time and a place for that, maybe with young kids or maybe with rehab. But generally speaking, you know, the idea of long toss is really to listen to your arm and allow it to breathe and stretch out to further and further distances. At some point, you're going to get to your furthest throw, and then you can start more of the pull down or the strengthening phase. But yeah, I would just say that what we've done a really good job of is bringing long toss to the baseball world in a way that's easy to understand. And also, believe it or not, my biggest push in long toss was because we used to have a camp for professionals before spring training, and we had it for 8 weeks, and we sent them to spring training, and I went to spring training for 20 straight years, and I was a hawk on the backfields, and because most of my guys were minor league pitchers, so I went to the backfields, and that was the first time, 1998 actually, was the first time I saw the cones out on the field at 60 feet, 90 feet, 120 feet. I actually thought they were getting ready to run the 60, and one of our kids in our camp was there, and he was out to 330 to 350 feet, you know, prior to leaving for spring training. And they had all the pitchers go out to 120 feet. They capped them. They brought them in. And I was baffled because I'd never seen this before. And all I know is we just spent 8 weeks getting this kid into, you know, what we call beast mode. And all of a sudden, not only is it 120 feet, it might have been 10 minutes of throwing, which, by the way, a lot of people don't understand this, but when someone says you get 10 minutes to throw, I got this from Andy McKay. Shout out to Andy. That's 5 minutes a person, but it's even less. I added a piece to that. By the time the ball's in the air and the exchange from glove to hand, it's about 3.5 minutes a person. So here we are preparing guys before they leave for spring training. We haven't built up to 20, 25 minutes, whatever they, however long they want to throw, out as far as they want. And now they go to spring training and they get put on these programs where they're dramatically restricted. And so that was really the big push for me to educate the community. And to be honest with you, it really, I don't feel like was happening much at the college level or high school level. It was really more of a pro thing. And I was just blown away, Peter. I went to so many spring trainings. I saw so many of our guys getting restricted. I had our guys would tell the organizations that they wanted long toss and stretch out. They weren't allowed to. So a lot of the fire behind the push for long toss is a result of players that were being forced into very conservative, restricted throwing programs to quote-unquote protect their arm, which is the irony. And so I know that was a really, really long answer, but in a way it gives you some point of reference as to not only, you know, a little bit of where back, you know, where long toss came from and why we, you know, why we kind of talked about the way we did, but also why I've been such a huge proponent of it and I've been pounding the drum of it, because I just want to make sure that as much as we love long toss, the main thing is we want kids everywhere to have the chance to allow their arms to dictate what they want each day and not have these artificial restrictions put on them, especially if their arm is in great shape and they've been trained to do that.
Absolutely. And I know you guys, you've had a group of guys who, if it wasn't for you guys pushing it, you, Wilford, I know House and, different, you know, the ranch down in Florida that, you know, pushing long toss. Now you're seeing it more and more in a lot of organizations. And I listened to your talk on one of the podcasts and realized that still some organizations are a little hesitant, but we'll get into that. What I'd love to hear was that term, listen to your arm. I wish I would have listened to my arm, because I remember at Mickey Owen Baseball School when I was 15, you know, we were taught the long toss, but we really didn't know. We just did it. You know, so we would throw long, so we threw long. You know, I did it every day, which probably was a big mistake. That's probably why my arm was sore. So there are ways to do it incorrectly, and I'd like to kind of, you know, get into that a little bit. You know, I know it's not a perfect, it's not, you know, it's not a cookie cut program, you know, where it's everything's the same. But, you know, is there ways that you could, things you can do it by doing it wrong that you can get hurt by doing it?
So I would say this. I would just say here are some really fundamental principles of long toss. Number one, when you first start building up your arm from scratch, go out slowly. Don't worry about distance. We're big into building volume. We want low impact throws. I use the analogy a lot of a BP pitcher, not even throwing that hard, but the idea is that they're making, you know, stretch low impact throws. And the idea is that you build some volume with these low impact throws with arc. That's another big point. Throw with arc from the onset, so you get that variance in your release point, you get range of motion, your body gets a chance to open up at different increments. But basically it's this. Give your arm a chance to breathe and stretch out accordingly. So, you know, let's say you throw 5-6 days a week. You may not be past 90 to 120 feet by the end of the first week. By the end of the second week, and I'm basing this on something that can get out to, let's say, 300 feet. Mm-hmm. By the end of the second week, you might not be out past 240, 250. By the end of the third week, you might be starting to push your max distance. So doing long toss right, it means building your arm into shape properly by just stretching it out first for the first 2 or 3 weeks, especially the first, I'd say, even 3 weeks. Don't worry about linear throwing, aggressive throwing, or what we call the pull-down phase. Just spend the first 3 weeks or so just stretching the arm out with arc, building distance, but really building volume and let the distance sort of happen by itself. So that's number one. That's like rule number one. Just completely stretch your arm up before you worry about any aggressive throwings, any aggressive throws or any pull-downs. Number two, once you feel like you've completely stretched out, you're ready to, let's say, get aggressive, you know, maybe bring the aggression phase, the pull-down phase, also in slowly, maybe 80, 90% the first week, and maybe only pull down every other day. So what happens is optimally you get your arm in shape by stretching it out first, building volume, building distance, and then eventually you start bringing in these pull-downs. And then you just sort of stay in that program where you maybe pull down heavy, you know, 3 days a week, and the other days you're stretching it out pretty much to your max distance, give or take. but you don't have to get as aggressive with pulling down. That to me is like the best formula. As far as other things about how would you get hurt long tossing, it would just be rushing. Let's say you are in great shape, but someone rushed you and said, hey, you got 5 minutes before your bullpen. That's a good way to get your arm in a vulnerable position, because now you rush the stretching out phase, you pull down and you're not quite ready. You know, that would be another example. The other examples are if you get into great shape through long toss, then you start taking off too much time, you know? So I think that once you build your base, the bottom line is maintenancing is pretty easy, because you're in such good shape. Your arm actually just wants to throw every day. It wants to stretch out every day. You just have to pick your spots of what days you want to pull down. And then we haven't even talked yet about for pitchers, when you integrate mound work, well, now it's a different animal, because now we have to deal with recovery period and build up and all that good stuff. But the simplest way to say this is that if you just build it really, really well through those sort of check marks I just went over, your arm is really happy and it actually thrives on throwing. It wants to throw. And that's actually the name of our first DVD, is Thrive on Throwing, because I just really believe if you build up your arm properly and you do it right, it wants to throw. That's just the bottom line. So I don't feel like there's like cut and dried things like this is going to get you hurt. I mean, you're going to get hurt faster by throwing 30 straight sliders or something, right? I guess maybe I'll leave it on this point. If you're going to ever throw aggressively, ever, whether it's on a mound or flat ground or pregame infield, outfield, always get your arm fully opened up, fully stretched out. That might be the single most important bit of advice I can give about, you know, throwing and avoiding a problem.
And folks, that also leads into, check out Alan's website, jagersports.com, because, you know, we're talking about, he's got a year-round throwing manual. He's got a year-round throwing manual. Jager bands, we'll talk about those in a minute here, because I want to get into a little bit about the bands also. He's got some great DVDs, digital downloads, so, you know, you download them right into your computer. Check it out, jagersports.com. Listen, Alan, also, you know, when we're talking about long toss, and you mentioned, you know, the protocols here a little bit, and folks, we're not going to be able to get in everything. That's why I want you to check out his website, too, because I think you really need to study this more and more. You know, when we're talking about injuries, when we're talking about long toss, does that, you have to complement it with, you know, like you mentioned, strength. You have to complement it with proper movements. Now, I understand, you know, I listened to you talk, and you mentioned, you know, that you want to just throw and let your body do it. You don't want to get into the mechanical phase when you're doing long toss. But if you don't have the right movements, if you're not strong enough, flexible, you mentioned hypermobile, I know, in one show. Again, can somebody get hurt if they're just long tossing only?
Well, I mean, look, if you do anything wrong, we could argue you can get hurt. I would say that to kind of answer your question or go toward your point, you want to obviously incorporate, you know, I shouldn't say obviously, but you want to incorporate as many things as you can from a strength, conditioning, flexibility, functional movement point of view. So we're massive on bands. We're massive on arm care. We're massive on stretching and flexibility. We're massive on yoga. I know things like core work are fantastic. You know, a lot of people out there now are doing weighted balls. There's a lot of things that are available out there to do. But look, as I've put out a tweet many times before, there's no substitute for throwing. So throwing is always king for me, always. But that doesn't mean there aren't other things that are also important. So yes, of course, we'd like to get kids that are strong and stable and flexible and you know, well-conditioned, you know, mechanically sound. But at the end of the day, you still have to take care of your arm, right? I mean, and yes, other parts of your body support the arm, but you've got to do your arm care stuff. Throwing it, to me, is still going to be the single most important element of your arm, of course. But yeah, we're all for, there's many modalities out there that, of course, are very important and very powerful for athletes' strength and conditioning, right? I mean, so Yeah, but we just where we get a little concerned is where kids start to focus or coaches start to focus too much on all of these other modalities at the cost of the throwing. And that, to me, might be a really important takeaway for everybody listening, that there's a time and a place to obviously do all the other stuff as well. Just be careful that you don't discard the throwing piece for all these other things. You know, you want to make sure your throwing is still the main focus.
And age-wise, recommend, and just, I mean, once you start playing baseball, this is something you should be doing to help you increase your arm speed or your velocity, also, you know, get better at throwing. I mean, you should start this right away.
Yeah, with little kids, we get the question a lot, when should my son start long tossing? And what I actually do is I start to change the verbiage. And I actually say from about 10 and under, maybe, I don't even like to use the term long toss. I want kids to get out there and throw. That's mm-hmm. the main thing. I am so big into just conditioning and volume throwing. And, yeah, it's great if the kids get out further and further. But, you know, I just there's a lot of distractions nowadays, whether it's cell phones, video games, all these things. So if you told me your kid was out throwing 5 or 6 days a week, I would be so pumped.
Yes.
Whether or not he long tosses perfectly and stretches it out to 200 feet and pulls down correctly, if you just told me that you went out with your kid and you got a good stretch in and you threw 5 days a week, I can already tell you that kid's going to have a great arm or as great as can be for based on him or her. But look, at the end of the day, there comes a point where, look, distance equals velocity, length mm-hmm. equals strength. So, and don't forget, as you go out further and further, you make more and more throws. Well, you're backdooring a lot of good conditioning. You're also backdooring feel, which is what you mentioned earlier about just throwing is obviously a great piece of the equation. I mean, we just got to get out there and throw and learn about our release point and learn about targets and learn about feel. So, the term long toss to me, I think once you get to a point where maybe you're 11, 12, and you're starting to really think about 180, 200 feet and, you know, really starting to get some distance, yeah, we can start talking about lengthening it out and pulling down. But I think for the younger kids, boy, if I have one bit of advice, just get out there and throw often, because not that I don't want you playing other sports, not that there's not a time to rest, but playing catch once or twice a week is not cutting it. It's just not. If you really want your arm to grow and evolve, as we say on Twitter all the time, you got to feed it. And, you know, I'll steal a line. I'm going to probably bring up people like Randy Sullivan a lot, but, mm-hmm. you know, Randy has a great line, which is your body's made to move. So your arm's made to move. It wants to move. So move it. You know, move it as often as you can is the bottom line.
Yeah, and I love you talking about, you know, throwing, because I just don't think we do enough of that, especially at the younger ages. Now, when we're talking about throwing, let's just talk about this part. Okay, mention, am I long tossing roughly 3 times a week every other day, and then in between playing catch, you know, because I'm going to play catch anyways to warm up prior to a game, whether I'm a pitcher or a position player, especially position players, you know, they're going to warm up also. So are we complementing this with, you know, long toss every other day and then playing catch in between?
Yeah, so this is going to probably surprise a lot of people. But and my partner, my business partner, Jim Vatcher, is a great testament of this. He played about 13 or 14 years professionally. And I know as a position player, so I have to separate a little bit. You know, he was a position player. When you get into great long toss shape and you get into great pull-down shape and you don't have to worry about bullpens and breaking balls and recovery period, you're actually stretching it out every day and you're pulling down every day. Now, some days maybe you don't pull down quite as hard, but I can tell you based on the way our program works, and again, we're working with nature, which is a very powerful force to work with. Your body is so intelligent. Your body, your arm is so resilient. I often say this line, you know, why do BP pitchers, you know, make 300-400 throws a day, 5-6 days a week for 40 years and don't break down? So if you take that symbolism, to me, it makes sense. You know, when I was a kid, I liked to throw every day. And because I didn't have to throw a bullpen or throw breaking balls, my arm recovered great because it was in great shape. So I would leave it like this. Position players, you are basically stretching it out every day. If you're a 300-foot guy, you're going approximately 300 feet every single day. You might pull down super aggressive three or four of those days, maybe go lighter the other two or three days. You can go light on one of those days. You might only go up to 200 feet, but I'm just telling you from experience, 29 years of doing this, when you throw the ball often and you're used to going up to 300 feet and you take great care of your arm, I am just telling you this, the next day, your arm is begging you to do the same. It doesn't want to go lighter. It doesn't need a day off. If it does, great, take it. So that's position players. Pitchers, I was really talking about, I think, at first. Mm-hmm. It sort of turns into an every other day, and the reason why is because at some point you're going to start panning on Monday and Friday or Tuesday and Saturday. You're going to start having a five-day cycle or a seven-day cycle. I've done the math. It's in the year-round throwing manual. Essentially, on a five-day, you're going to long toss the day of your start. Then 3 days later is going to be another good long toss day, and then the day of your start. So it's sort of like day one, day three, day six. So you're going to get in three good long toss days with pull-down days about every other day, like you said. On a seven-day, it's sort of day one, sort of day three and four. I have to do the math. It might even be day it's sort of like day three and four, even could be four and five. Even could be three and five, and then again day seven, day eight, which is your start day. So you sort of get 3.5 to 4 long toss days in with good pull down days. Now for pitchers, yes, they're filling in. You threw 100 pitches on a Sunday. On a Monday, you might only go out to 120 feet, 90 feet, stretch it out. Tuesday, you might go out to 220 to 250 to 280, and then Wednesday, you might go out fully to 300 feet, pull down, throw a side, or the next day, do the same, stretch it out, pull down, and then throw aside one of those 2 days. Then the days, those 2 days after that, leading up to your seventh day again, or your next start date, you know, it might be 220 the day after your pen. It might be 120 the day before your start. So exactly what you said, you're filling in those blanks based on, you know, what your long toss days are like. But for position players, I'm just telling you, you go to the field, it's like a catcher playing every day. He's got to make intent throws to second base or third base, right? Like, he's got to cut loose. So you don't want to shock the arm. You don't want the outfielder to be shocked by making a throw to home plate in the first inning. Mm-hmm. So, therefore, you want the arm fully stretched out before the game, and you want to get some pull-downs in before the game because you're going to pull down at some point probably in the game. And when you shock the arm by not doing that kind of stuff, and then you have poor recovery period because of it, that's when guys want to start taking days off and back off. So you have a choice. Get into a good cycle by doing a lot of conditioning and prep and then staying in good shape and then your arm is happy. Or don't get in great shape, and even if you do get in great shape, but then the season comes around and maybe you slack off a little bit and you don't really throw as much and you go out to 150 feet and you kind of pull down a little bit. You get out of condition and then you're kind of asking for trouble in the game. So that was another long way of saying that, yes, with the pitchers, you fill in the blanks other than maybe 3 to 4 days if you're not in pro ball with, you know, more lighter days, so to speak. But if you're a position player, I'm telling you, you get to a point. My buddy, you know, again, Jim Vatcher, my business partner, he long tossed every single day of his career for probably 14 years. He was voted best arm in the PCL 1 year. He had an absolute hose, and he was begging people every day to long toss with him because he needed it, he wanted it, and it's what kept him healthy. And the irony is that he had a hard time finding people. And the guys he did find, he found Jeremy Brunitz 1 year in AAA with the Mets. And I don't know if Jeremy was, you know, big into long toss and or maybe long tossing that much. And then Jim and Jeremy got into a little bubble for an entire season. I think he got called up at some point, but you know, Jeremy had a plus arm, and he always had a plus arm, but maybe he just wasn't throwing as much with it. It's stuff like that that inspires me. You know, that the arm has so much. I'll give you one other quick story. Eric Burns, who a lot of people will remember, he had a great career at the A's, and Eric told me this once that He had a good arm in college. He had a good arm in pro ball. But, you know, he went through a phase where maybe he just sort of did what a lot of players do. They just go out and play catch. They don't really work on it. They're maybe not fully long tossing. And they're just sort of getting by, and they're okay. It works. But he signed with Seattle his last year, and Ichiro came up to him and said, "You're going to throw with me." And Eric told me, after, I'm just going to say, 5 to 8 years of what he would probably call very average throwing for a guy that had a really good arm, and he said within about 2 or 3 weeks of spring training, he could not believe how electric his arm got. He was like 18 again. It blew his mind. He was throwing with carry and life and explosiveness. And so Ichiro loved the long toss. He wanted to stretch it out. He wanted to throw a lot. As you know, in the Japanese culture, they're really good about reps and conditioning. And whether you think it's too much or not, with all the pitches they throw in the bullpen, they're more in our style of mentality, you know. Throw to grow. You use it, and the more you know, it's like the more you use it wisely, the more it produces. So anyway, I'm just, yeah, a little tangent there, but hopefully it's sort of in a roundabout way got to the main points.
No, that's all right, and I'm glad you got into the 5-7 day program also a little bit. You know, you talk about Japan. I mean, they're a great example. They've been doing it 100 years, who knows, even more. They're a great example. When you go there, you'll see, I mean, everybody long tosses. Everybody throws hard there. There isn't many guys that do not throw hard. And then you mentioned conditioning. I mean, some of the best conditioned athletes that I've ever seen in the world. Now, you also mentioned pull downs about 20 times, and that sounds like a real critical phase. Can you explain pull downs and why they're good for you, and why you do them in a program?
Yes, and it's a really great question. I'm glad you brought that up too, because it is important, because we hear that term thrown around all the time, and from training guys for years and years and years, it was very rare for someone to pull down correctly until we really explained it. So, great question and prompt. A pull down in by definition, is not complicated. Doing it is very, very difficult if someone's not really there to walk you through it and really remind you of it, because it's not easy to pull off. A pull-down is essentially, we'll use 300 feet again as a simple number. Let's say 300 feet is your max distance. So we're going to call that X. Okay? So you went to your max distance. You couldn't go a foot more. So now we know X equals 300 feet, your furthest throw. Now, when we come in from our throwing partner from our furthest distance, we come in about 10 feet of throw, which is a good number, because that means within 23 throws, you're at 70 feet. So it's a reasonable number. You can come in faster if you want, but no matter which way you come in, and the other reason I like 10 feet is it gives you a chance to really incrementally adapt to your release point without these big jumps. So what happens is at 290 and 280 and 270, it's sort of hard to see if you're pulling down correctly. I mean, it's a nuance, we can tell, but it's give or take, you're only aiming a little lower than a 300-foot throw, so it's not a huge, you know, contrast. But you start getting 250, 220, especially 200, 180, 150, and so on, now it becomes black and white. And what happens is the average player does a couple things. As they start moving into their throwing partner, they start to decelerate slightly because they don't want to throw the ball over their partner's head. Because if you threw it 300 feet and now you're at 220, well, it's going to go over their head unless you aim lower and figure out the way to throw it just the right speed so it doesn't go over their head. So usually people will decelerate to do that. The problem with that is that what we're trying to do is we're trying to maintain. So a true pull down is maintaining the X, the furthest throw or the furthest intent. So the second issue that happens is that people will decelerate just because they don't know what it means to maintain intent, because maintaining intent is a bit of a trick. We're not used to it. We might be used to playing burnout at 80 feet or 70 feet or something, but we're just not quite used to really cutting it loose. So people will tend to decelerate subconsciously anyway. What we do is we take a player, let's say you know, let's say we'll give them the first 50, 60 feet. They're in the ballpark. Let's say once they get to about 240, I'll watch a throw, and I'll see that the ball is a few degrees lower. It's got some life on it. It looks good. It's like a pull down. But I'll say to the player, I'll say, if I took that last throw and I changed the angle to the angle of your furthest throw today at 300 feet or X, would your last throw have gone 300 feet? And right away they'll go, no. It would have gone like 260, which is still a good throw, and it still has some carry. So then we'll make them throw it again, and I'll say, okay, you have to throw this ball 300 feet. You have to aim lower than you think. Aim 10 feet in front of your partner if you have to. But the only way you win is if you maintain 300 feet on this throw. And I'm telling you, Pete, from doing this for 29 years and a lot more as a player myself, very few people can pull us off the first time. It takes a few reps. It takes a few, you know, competitive juices to get them going. Maybe, you know, get them a little upset because you keep saying, no, that was 85%. That was 91%. At some point, what happens is they get that feeling of like, okay, I'm going to throw this 300 feet. Even if I airmail them, I'm going to throw it 300 feet. And once they do that, it's magic. Because what they realize is that they've maintained the intent of the furthest throw. Now, we like to give them a couple of keys because we want the ball to finish lower than higher for a lot of reasons, including mechanical reasons. So we have a couple of sayings on the way in on a pull down. One is don't decelerate. Two is miss lower than higher. We'd rather the ball bounce 20 feet in front of the partner's feet than 1 inch over their head. So this gives the brain some relief, like, oh, okay, I can bounce the ball. Now I don't have to worry about throwing the ball over their head. I'm telling you from doing this a long time, you will see guys come in from their long toss and the ball's got life and carry, and it does look like a pull down, and to a degree it is a pull down, but a true pull down. the art of pulling down is maintaining your furthest throw X all the way back into your throwing partner. So the last thing I'll say is this. Now let's get up to 120, 190 feet, 80 feet. Now you take a 300-foot throw into, let's say, 80 feet, and you maintain the intent, X, of 300 feet, and the ball ends up on your partner at knee-high or lower. Remember, there's no deceleration. You've compressed 300 feet into this 80 feet.
Into the 80, yeah.
So here's the cool thing about now you're starting to feel the extension and the range of motion. Now you're starting to let that translate into that life and explosiveness and arm speed out in front. And here's the last thing I'll say about why it's so important mechanically. I've had many debates with people about, well, why throw uphill when you're on a mound and trying to throw downhill, or why change your release point? It could be for a position player too. Well, here's the benefit now of going uphill. All right, so we went 30 degrees uphill to throw at 300 feet. You tell me what happens, and I love asking this question to people. I'm going to make up a scenario to really drive this point home, okay? Because if you went out to 300 feet, if you get into 60 feet, that's too dangerous unless you gear up a catcher. Mm. I want you to imagine that you went out to 400 feet, and then we brought you in to 50 feet. We geared up a catcher, which would be too dangerous to do. But I want to make up the scenario in the brain so that this drives a point home. If I told you you were able to maintain the intent of a 400-foot throw that probably took you 40 degrees uphill to get there, and you were able to maintain that 400 feet into 50 feet to a geared-up catcher to where it hit him in his right toe, and you did not decelerate 1 inch of that 400 feet, what kind of mechanics do you have to pull that up? Not to mention, I'm going to give you a hint. What kind of state of mind do you have to pull that off?
Yeah.
Can you see?
It has to be perfect. I mean,
perfect.
Yeah, your body's going to reorganize then, right, to get to that perfect spot?
Not only is it going to reorganize, I don't know if this makes sense to people. To me, it almost reorganizes better than it could have by throwing the ball on a line all day or not throwing uphill, because now the body has to figure out in space, wait a minute, I was just going uphill 40 degrees. I got to figure out how to get my release point out in front of me to where it's almost touching the ground. But I got to be able to do that without my body beating me, my front side pulling out, my head pulling out. Mm. I've got to relax enough mentally. I've got to be loose enough in my body. And then I have to be able to finish the job by getting downhill with explosiveness, again, without any of my body parts beating me. Mm. This, to me, is the epitome of the perfect throw. And when you can start doing that, it is magic. When we had professional guys that were out really far, like 350, 370, and I'm telling you, we couldn't get them in. I want to throw a disclaimer. I don't want anybody taking a 300 or 400 foot guy into 50 feet with a geared up catcher. That's a disclaimer. But we bring in guys, and the Dominican, we did this with the Rangers. We had a bunch of big arms. We had a bunch of catchers geared up. We brought them into 60 feet, and we were testing them. Can you take that 350 that you just threw it? And can you crow hop and get downhill out in front and maintain the same intent, the X of your 350 without decelerating one inch, and have the ball end up shin high or lower? Mm. That was the game.
Wow.
And I'm telling you, when you do that, no matter what you do on a baseball field, hitting, fielding, diving, for whatever you do, I would bet it would be one of the hardest experiences of joy and artistic, you know, endeavor to feel in any other aspect of the game. It is one of the most magical feelings when you can pull that off. And I'm telling you, for 29 years, you know, we've taught it and we've seen it, and it's magic. And we've seen guys gain tremendous velocity, which is always the last thing we talk about. We always first talk about health, endurance, conditioning, recovery period, feel, athleticism. But we've had some major jumps, and it's really because, in my opinion, yes, guys learned about bands and arm care. Yes, guys learned how to stretch their arm out properly over a period of time. But until they figured out how to pull down correctly, they weren't getting to that next gear. They were getting to a good gear. They might have gone from 90 to 93 just because of all the conditioning and the stretching out phase, mm-hmm. but they weren't getting from 93 to 98 because they were not training the arm how to pull down correctly. And I know that was a really long answer, but believe it or not, that question, it is such a nuance, because it is rare to go to a field and watch kids are truly pulling down. And we have a video on YouTube. If they just Google Jager and long toss, they'll see one of our guys who is our VP, China McCarney. They'll see him going 360, and they'll see him pulling down with 100% intent and popping 97 at the end. And he's like 6'5", maybe 160 pounds, 170 pounds in the video.
Yeah, you guys are on a football
field,
right? He's
mastered pull-down phase. And it's just a very nuanced part of long toss that I don't think people really understand the depth of it. Yes, they know it. Pulling down means to, you know, get on top of your stretching out phase. But are you pulling down to really optimize the reason you stretched your arm out, one of them at least, are you really optimizing your leverage and your explosiveness?
Yeah, I'm watching your video now on YouTube. You got to check it out, folks. You're on a football field, and I see where it's increasing 315 feet, and he keeps going back. Now, my question, I guess, just so I understand that, don't make a mistake on this, is when you gone to your max, now you're coming back, you're pulling down. You might have mentioned it, but you do that at, like, how many times, like, you do that? You come back at, let's say you're at 300, you come back at every 50 feet, every 30 feet, you keep coming back?
We come back about 10 feet to throw, and mm-hmm. I've always told players, if you want to come in a little slower, a little faster, it's up to you, because you're making here's the cool part. You're making the same throw.
Mm-hmm.
Every increment as you come back in, whether you come in 5 feet to throw or 50 feet to throw, you're still maintaining the intent of your furthest throw. So you're making the same throw. Of course, you're aiming lower.
Sure.
But we like 10 feet, maybe 15 feet max, because it keeps you in a small increment, so where your release point is not, you know, doesn't have to go from like A to Z. It can go from kind of A to B to C. And so it just helps with your feel to kind of stay in a similar place. You know, you go 300, 290, 280, 270, 260, you're aiming a little lower each time, but your release point's not changing much. And that's a cool feeling as you come in slowly. If you go 300 feet to 250 right away, it's sort of a lot of guesswork, and I think yep. that's where guys also might decelerate because they're just sort of trying to figure out where to release it, how hard to throw it. So that 10-foot increment coming in, Pete, it's just it just works. We've done it forever.
Makes sense.
And look, it only takes to go from 300 feet to, let's say, 2 to 70 feet, which is what we'd recommend you kind of stop at because it starts getting dangerous after that. It's only 23 throws, and and again, you can come in every 20 feet, and then it's only 12 throws or so.
Yeah, Alan, question for you, and because you see this sometimes, and I believe you had mentioned it one time on another podcast. Movement's important here because you see a lot of guys sometimes they don't move to throw the ball; they kind of stay in the same spot.
Movement as far as like crawling, getting your body involved?
Yeah, get the body going.
Massive. Huge. We, you know, early on, we don't mind if guys aren't moving much so they can feel their arm, they can feel their trunk. But we want guys crawling as soon as possible. We want them getting their legs involved. We want them getting their core involved. We want them freeing stuff up. We want them getting athletic. So we'll crow hop right away, and the way we crow hop, ironically, we it's not quite the way it's in the video. It's in other videos we have, but it's in our Thrive on Throwing video. But we basically want players going off their back legs. If you're right-handed, we basically want you to just take a little step with your left foot and then hop off your right foot. So we want you loading off your back leg just like you would if you're throwing a baseball or pitching or hitting.
Question that comes up a lot, because this happens, you know, all of a sudden somebody takes a break and decides to take off a month, you know, just let their body relax. But now they've got to come back and restart again now. And, you know, we can get into the showcases because guys are getting ready for showcases and sometimes they take 2 weeks off, but there's a period here where now you got to restart all over again. So what's the recommendation there? Do we take a break in, throughout the year or do we keep throwing?
Yeah, well, boy, it's a very complicated question because there's so many variables about what did you do the month before, 2 months before, 6 months before, year before. But the short answer is this: if you build up your arm properly, that's why the first section we have in the manual is the build-up phase. If you build up your arm properly and you have a great base, then you go into maintenance mode, whether you're a starter, reliever, or position player. Pretty straightforward how to stay in good shape. You have to be proactive, you have to do your arm care, you have to keep your throwing going. The main question is always going to come down to, okay, I just finished a long season, how much time off, and then I have maybe this showcase and I have this scout team or travel ball, but then I need to rest for this much period because then my high school season starts or my college season starts. So I would just say refer to the manual, really, because the answers are in there, but the short answer is this. If you want to take off an extended period of time, like anything more than 4 weeks for me, and again, this is something from Randy Sullivan, your body's made to move, I would just say this. If you take off 4 weeks and you decide you don't want to do anything, I can't argue with that. Sometimes we need a mental break. The body needs to rest. But a couple things. This is also from Randy. Did you deload from a long season? Well, number one, did you back off incrementally or did you just stop? Because Randy will tell you through science why just stopping is not good for the body. So that's number one. Two, let's say you take your 4 weeks off. Great. Just make sure that the next phase of your rest, if you're going to take off more than 4 weeks, that you start doing, let's just say, band work at least 3 to 5 times a week. Just as nothing else to even think about, start doing that. The next thing I'd say is this. If you are going to get into shape, it's going to take you 4 to 5 weeks to get into shape just to throw one bullpen. So that will help with the formula. The last thing I'll say is this. If you really ever want to do this right to figure out how much to rest or how much to prepare, always start with a target date and say, okay, January 8th, when I come back to school, I'm throwing my first bullpen. Okay, great. You need 4 to 5 weeks to get into great long toss shape to prepare for your first bullpen. Well, if you know that's your first bullpen, you just have to work backward. And you can work backward through your rest period, too. You can work backward through what's called active rest. I guess a couple of takeaways would be, one, once you're ready to rest, rest. Two, once you're ready to build up, build up. The most dangerous thing that goes on out there is kids are between, like, summer ball, which is fine because they're still going from the spring season. So to a degree, I'm fine with that if they want to just keep going. The danger to me is really between the middle to end of summer and January and February, when most kids are expected to be back in shape again, because that's when there should be a nice, it's like a nice sweeping wave. There should be this nice wave of deloading into rest, into active rest, into build up, into get after it again for the next 6 months. Versus, like, that's the way I'd want to do it. Versus, the summer ends, they can still deload, they can still sort of rest, but then there's a showcase or two they got to do, but then they can rest again for a month. Then scout ball starts, and they only need to pitch one inning on the weekend. But that goes, you know, through the end of, you know, November, early December. Then do they get another rest in, and then do they have enough time to build up again properly? Now they're tired in March and April. So to me, that's where you start introducing all these variables and to me, all these complications versus I like these sweeping waves. Get into shape the right way, like an animal, like a beast. Maintenance yourself great. You can go 6-7 months that way. You can, just no problem. Once you stop, deload properly, rest properly, do your active rest prior to your build-up phase again, build up awesomely, if that's a word, and then you're into maintenance mode again, and you can roll. And the pro schedule is set up really for guys to optimize their off seasons. It's mm-hmm. perfect. Go through September, October. They then, not that a lot of them do this, but they should deload. Then they can go into some rest. Then they can go into their active rest. And then they've got like a 3 month chunk to just build it up slowly, get into mound work shape, get ready for spring training.
Perfect. I'll tell you what, Alan, you know, I know we don't have a lot of time left and there's so much to talk about. And I know our folks understand, you know, this is not a one-day topic or a two-hour topic. There's a lot on Alan's website. You got to check it out. And you know what? Alan's got great stuff on the website. And some, you know, some things are free. You know, it's not all about just buying everything. But I would definitely recommend look at the DVDs and look at the manual, the year-round throwing program. You talked about a plan. You know, if you have a good plan, you have a better chance of success. So you have no plan, you're going in blind, you're just going to hurt yourself. Alan, you mentioned the bands. I'm kind of curious. Where do the bands fit in into the throwing program? Do they fit in right away, or do they complement it so you're doing it also every other day? How do the bands fit in, band workouts?
Yeah, for us, the bands are just something you do automatically before you throw. I mean, we don't even want kids thinking about it. I mean, of course, I just talked about active rest and doing that when you're not doing anything too, but for me, the bands are just, they're magic because it's sort of like someone, I just used this analogy earlier today talking to a friend. If I'm going to go out and run a 60, I want 30 minutes to get my legs right. You can argue to get my whole body right, but I want to make sure my hamstrings, my quads, my calves are stretched out, my core. I might want to go for a jog, right? I might want to go for a little late run. It's a preparation, right, to run 160, right? I mean, I literally might want 30 minutes to run a 60, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, someone else may say, well, I'm already in shape, and I just need like 3 minutes to stretch my legs, and I can go. Well, I'm just saying, I'm using the extreme. Your arm, with these small rotator cuff muscles, right, you want to, it's an 8 to 10 minute workout. It's like, why would you not want to do this 8 to 10 minute workout where you're getting stretching, range of motion, blood flow, oxygenation, you're balancing out the small muscles, you're getting the back of the shoulder stronger, which tends to be the weaker part because it's the deceleration, like the brake pads to your arm. So to me, it's just like, I love yoga. So it's almost like you're doing yoga in your shoulder. You're doing this great stretching program in your shoulder, not to mention there's other parts of the body that you get out of our band program, before you throw. It's just optimal preparation. Not to mention, by the way, not only are you prepared and in a much healthier place, it really like turbocharges your throwing that day. It optimizes your throwing experience. And one other thing, when you do a band program or an arm care program that really prepares the arm before you go out and throw, you recover better the next day. And I know we don't have time to get into this, but recovery starts to become a massive piece to longevity and staying healthy. So just know that the band program pre does obviously many, you know, it has many benefits. But a lot of people don't realize the other big benefit too is that it enhances the throwing experience so much that you're actually going to have great recovery. And we have a post-throwing, especially for pitchers after they get on a mound, we have a post-throwing arm care program as well, which is basically the first part, only just doing all the external rotation movements. So bands for us, look, I know we sell them, but for me, they're just, you don't even think about it. You do your arm care program before you throw, that's all.
And the bands, I mean, everybody's using them all over the world. I see them on at the big league level, minor league levels, colleges. You know, and I'm glad you brought up the recovery part, because I know, like you said, we don't have time to get into major details in recovery. But the recovery part is important, because otherwise, you know, you're coming back weaker. So you mentioned the bands. If you have some suggestions, some other suggestions, how to recover a little quicker, What would be some of those areas to be able to recover your body, say if you're coming back to pitch?
Well, number one for me is going to be post-arm care, for sure. That's like the most direct hit. I would say any kind of cardio. You know, I know nowadays, you know, long-distance running is not, you know, looked at as maybe a major positive, but whatever you do, get on a bike, get in a pool. Anything you can do that starts the oxygenation process or starts the cardio process. You know, I'm not as familiar with it. I know that I believe people use weighted balls for, reverse throws or external rotation stuff. I think, you know, following people like Eric Cressy out there and Ron Wolforth and, of course, Randy Sullivan, you know, there's... Mm-hmm. Do your homework on the strength and conditioning people and the drivelines of the world and the people that are out there that are heavy into arm development and arm training. But I know, again, it's our product, even though there's lots of other bands out there. But I'm just saying, for my money, the first thing I want to do after start or after a bullpen or whatever, I want to get on the bands and I want to do a lot of external rotation, backward movements, because I just went forward a lot. And to me, it's the best. Yeah. I look at band work as like, you know, you'll appreciate this as old school. You know, we used to run 12, 16 poles, right?
Yeah.
And in my mind, what long distance running did for me, for whatever it was worth psychologically, I just felt like I was oxygenating and clearing stuff out and maybe minimizing the lactic acid. And, I'm not a scientist. I'm not even sure how it all works. But I can say this, when I do bands, I just feel that great, good pump in my shoulder. I feel like things are starting to, you know, recover and heal. And look, that it's just what part of what you do. You do post-throwing. There's all sorts of things out there you can do for post-throwing recovery. But I just find that stuff with your arm and band work, again, just to me, feels like the most direct hit.
Yeah, you know, I love bands too, because they're easy to take with you everywhere. They're not heavy. I mean, there's a lot of benefits, and I've heard a lot of players say the same thing that you said. By using the bands, they just felt better the next day. Alan, last question. This can go on. You know, we could have a 10-hour show, and I would keep going. This is awesome.
thanks, man.
The thing I want to ask, it's going to be completely off subject on this one. What is Alan, because I'm curious, you know, you're being in, you know, like you mentioned, all the years you've been doing this, what does Alan Jaeger do to stay on top of the science, because everything's moving so fast in your industry, also in our industry in general, it's just, you know, high speed right now. What do you do to keep up with the industry, keep up what you're doing to make sure, you know, because there's always something else out there that might be a little bit better to use, or maybe a change that you're going to make. What do you do to kind of keep yourself fresh?
Yeah, so what a great question. You know, to be bluntly honest, I feel like, you know, we found our lane, my business partner and I, and again, China, and my nephew now works with us. Our lane is arm care, is long toss, is throwing protocols, big time mental game. So I feel like we have a really, really good system in place, and we just want to keep promoting that and keep spreading the word and keep fine-tuning that with people and helping people incorporate it. I'm really, really good at punting things. You know, if someone asks me a strength and conditioning question, I'll tell them to go check out Randy Sullivan or Eric Cressy,
Duggan,
or Casey Fisk. If someone asks me a question about weighted balls, I will punt to Driveline and Ron Wolforth.
Sure.
Mechanically, if they bring stuff up, I like to go immediately to athleticism and feel and really learning how to dance and let your body, you know, organize itself. So I think to answer your question is that I think there's so much depth. And look, you just said it. We can go from 1 hour to 10 hours talking about some very, quote-unquote, simple things like throwing and long toss. But as you can see, the depth of this, the nuance of this stuff goes on and on and on. I could talk about the pull-downs alone for an hour, right? So I think that really our job is to continue to beat the drum and carry the flag of what we feel like are just still the most critical piece of arm development, which is throwing and long toss and the manual and stuff we get into. Obviously, arm care is another part of it. The mental game is another piece of it. So yeah, I think that really we're just it's just sort of a fermenting and a deepening of what we do and a continuing to spread the word. I, to be honest with you, if I was a pitching coach in this day and age, because I know from my friends out there that the kind of stuff that they deal with and have to stay on top of, I give them a lot of credit. Because for me, one of the things I love about our program, and I can hear my partner Jim saying this right now, it's very, very simple and very, very effective. And so in a way, I don't know if I want to get into all the complexities of all the other things going, you know, like analytics and data and all this stuff and, you know, spin rate. And I know it's great and I know it's helpful. We just like to stick with the foundation and the core of things that we think people really have to always do. They always have to have good arm care. They always have to understand what long toss and distance throwing and volume throwing is about and endurance and recovery and feel and athleticism and accuracy, right? So these are things that we are always, this is baseball 101. You have to, you can't play the game if you can't throw any position. You can't play the game if you're hurt. So for us, that's why instead of trying to stand top of all these other things, yeah, I still like to learn and I still love hearing, you know, about things that are going on out there, but we love the lanes that we feel like we really have a good feel for and we just want to keep getting better and keep spreading that word.
Well said, man. I got to tell you, you know, not only well said, but if you check out the website, jaegersports.com, you're going to know exactly what Alan's talking about because all the information that's on there, there's so much. And as you mentioned, you know, a lot of it, you know, it's simple, but yet there's a lot of it to understand. And sometimes simplicity is really good because in an age of technology and things just, like I said, speeding up fast, man, sometimes I get a headache and I love simplicity. So, hey, Alan, last thing, you know, there's so much to talk about, but I know you have a lot of passion for this. There's got to be something that you wanted to say that, you know, I didn't get a chance to ask that question. So I'll give you whatever time you need. Last minute thing, all our coaches, players, and parents around the world, anything you want to mention, and then we will close it off, my friend.
Yeah, I always default to where I started, really. I first started really in the mental game. I wrote a book back in the 90s, which feels like a long time ago. But
yes,
it's the book I feel like is still very current. And I think the biggest thing I push now with coaches when we talk is having some kind of a daily practice with their players, something to get them to stop, let go of the day, let go of the video games, let go of the social media, let go of the cell phone, get quiet, get into their breathing, some type of meditation, some type of mental practice. I just feel like in this day and age, the research and science has been around for at least 50 plus years on the benefits of meditation and relaxation and visualization. So I think this next generation needs that more than anything. We all need it. But so I would urge coaches out there and players out there that are listening. And again, we have a lot of free stuff on YouTube and on our website, as you said, loads. And I would just say, if you really want to do yourself the biggest favor, not only for sports but life, is start really paying attention to the mental game. Start really paying attention to what kinds of things can you do each day to practice, you know, some kind of exercise to help clear your mind and relax your body and have maybe a better focus. Learn how to let distractions go. Learn how to stay out of your thoughts that are taking you into the future and in the past that are distracting you. So I'm encouraged. I've personally done stuff with meditation with Oregon State and Vanderbilt and Auburn and Michigan this year with Chris Fetter brought some meditation in. I know Ed Blankmeyer at St. John's is doing stuff with breathing. Donegal Fergus at Santa Barbara, Rich Hill at USD, Brady Kirkpatrick at Harvard. So for me, I'm very encouraged because I feel like more and more of this is happening. And if anybody really wants to get a good chunk of the mental game, besides our information, I did a podcast with Jeremy Schietinger of ABCA about 6-7 episodes ago, and it's a good hour and a half of just pounding. It's just the mental game. So that would be another really, really good resource for people to be aware of.
Absolutely. I listened to it. Awesome. Go to it. And the ABCA, a great, great coaches association, the best in the world. Their convention's coming up in January. Hey, Alan, you know, the show's over, but I forgot one thing. And it is my show, so I guess I get to ask another question. Is that all right?
Sure.
I wanted to, and I bring it up because I was listening to the podcast, another podcast you were on, and sometimes, you know, this is, I thought, was great advice to coaches. I want you to explain, when you first get a player and he comes to you, and I know, you know, without giving it away because I already heard it, what you do with that player, because a lot of us tend to kind of go in the wrong direction sometimes and start teaching things right away. I want our audience to understand that a little bit. I thought that's
awesome. Exactly where you're going. You want me to explain that now?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, no, I would just say that I think the first job of any coach, probably any parent, but we'll stick with coaching for now since I don't have kids, but assess, right? Watch. You know, first see if this player, because maybe this player doesn't know a lot, and maybe this player has come from, you know, Eric Cressy's place, or has trained with Driveline, or has learned our long toss program, or is heavy into yoga. Watch the player. Learn from the player. Nothing wrong with making suggestions at some point, but I think what happens is coaches will get a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction that they have a plan, they have a certain mechanic they want the player to do, they have a certain throwing program, and they want to kind of impose that. And I'm not saying this is all coaches or even a lot of coaches, but I'm just saying in general, the most important thing for a player to do is, sorry, for a coach to do, is to let the player do their thing, go to school on the player, ask the player questions, do your homework. And basically you're doing a big assessment and evaluation. I mean, at some point you can say, hey, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about trying that? And I think one of the biggest dangers there are to an athlete of any walk of life, but I can say it for throwing for sure, one of the biggest dangers and one of the fastest ways to hurt an arm is to have a kid come to your program, whether it's pro ball, college, high school, travel ball, and without first learning about their program, what makes them tick and their routine, you immediately impose or implement something on them, whether it's a restricted throwing program or a mechanical thing or to making them throw a curveball a different way. And to me, that's just dangerous. And I've lived this. I can tell you this firsthand. I've had countless kids that have gone into situations where they were forced to do something against their will a different way. with disastrous results. And I can tell you firsthand that from a player's point of view, an agent's point of view, a parent's point of view, the kids have to realize at some point they have to stand their ground and they have to stick up for what they believe in. And if it means switching schools, if it means talking to organizations before the draft and just saying, hey, I want to make sure that, you know, I like to do this and I like to do that. But, man, there has to be communication. It's more the onus is ultimately on the player to stand their ground. But, man, I just hope more and more coaches and organizations and schools out there, their number one job is to get the kid in and learn about the kid and study the kid and research the kid. And then at some point, start playing with some ideas and some suggestions.
All right. Fantastic. Alan, great way to end the show. Thanks, buddy. We really appreciate the extra time. Have a great weekend and keep it going, man. Spread the great word.
Yeah. And Pete, really, I mean this sincerely. Thank you so much for having me on here and putting, you know, time aside in your world to check out what's going on here on the West Coast. I really appreciate you having me on, man. And I know, again, you're doing so many great things. It's just it's an honor to do this with you.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate it. Folks, Alan Jaeger, jaegersports.com. Check it out, man. You got to go to his website. A lot of free stuff you can look at, learn a ton, and then, you know, check out all his arm care. But it's just not just arm care. He's got so much going on in the game of baseball. And like he said, it keeps it really simple and really easy to understand. Folks, thanks for joining. We really appreciate it. Today is October 11th, 2019, Friday. Another great show. I want to thank first Alan Jaeger, then our producer Brian Kroc with the Liner Media Group. Thank you. Thanks to all our listeners, especially new listeners. And don't forget, check us out on all the social media. We'll have all Alan's social media. He's on Jaeger Sports pretty much on website, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and then YouTube is Alan Jaeger. Check out all his YouTube information. Great, great videos. Love them. And check ours out, Baseball Out. We are on Facebook, Twitter, also Instagram. So check it all out, folks. We really appreciate it. Spread the great word about our show. We're trying to get the show out as best we can. It's a lot of education. This is the show that loves to, you know, challenge the status quo. And we bring on some of the best people in the game of baseball, some of the best experts, not only in baseball, but also in other sports. We love learning from other sports. So again, thanks everybody. Don't forget, continue to watch the playoffs. You can learn so much by watching the playoff games. Pay attention to what goes on in the game. There's so many things you can learn, good and bad, because, you know, they're human beings just like we are. They're great athletes, but they do make mistakes, and we can learn from that also. So thanks, folks. This is Pete Caliendo. I'm your host of Baseball Outside the Box. And guess what? We will see you on the next show. Take it easy, bud. Bye-bye.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.